Hi everyone and welcome back to Memcast. I'm Rachel Saville and I'll be your host for today. I've got the pleasure of introducing Dr. Connie Gilman to join me today. Connie's one of our palliative care registrars here in the East Midlands, and today we're going to be discussing how to manage nausea. Hiya Connie, welcome to the show.
Hello.
The reason we're talking about nausea today is that it's a really common symptom and there's lots of possible causes, and it's a request we hear quite frequently from our nursing team. You know, our patient's feeling sick, can you come prescribe something for them please, doctor? So one of the main points we want you guys to get out of today is to avoid this reflex reaching for cyclosine, which seems to be the go-to medication for most junior doctors, and to really think about the cause of the nausea and how your management options work so that we can most efficiently treat the symptom. So our palliative care colleagues are experts at symptom control. So I'm really looking forward to hearing your take on this today, Connie. And hopefully at the end of this episode, our listeners will have a nice systematic way of managing the nauseous patient. So first things first, how would you categorise nausea?
There's a few ways to categorise nausea, and I suppose sort of with the caveat today of the patients I look after are a palliative care population. So we think about it in kind of a disease related. So is it related directly to their disease? You know, is it because of a tumour or a mass that's specifically causing nausea? Is it because something going on in the brain? So sort of things that are specific to the disease trajectory. Or is it a result of treatments that were given them, be that systemic anti-cancer treatments, other treatments that were given people, medications that were given them, because we all know that, you know, the side effect of every single medication seems to be nausea and vomiting. But actually, we know that most kind of nauseas are multifactorial. Most people don't have one cause of nausea, particularly in the type of patients we see now that have got multiple comorbidities and are on multiple medications, have been on antibiotics and things that are kind of toxins, have had anaesthetics, you know, stressed and anxious and or pregnant or whatever. So most people have got lots of causes for their nausea.
And just to delve a little bit more into those causes, what would you say are the most common causes of nausea that you see?
The kind of way that myself and probably most of my colleagues think about it is probably a sort of four or five different causes of nausea. So I suppose one of the common ones that we see is your gastric stasis. So these are your patients that are maybe feeling a bit bloated, feeling full, struggling to eat, maybe burping, and kind of have got something in their history or something in their presentation or their recent imaging or something that makes you think that things might not be moving, things might be kind of sitting in the stomach for a while. So lots of the drugs that we use cause that. So antimuscarinics, opioids, people post-surgery can get kind of a bit of ileus and a bit of slowing down of things. Loads of drugs cause it. Or is it a tumour related? Is it that they've got a head of pancreas tumour or a big liver with lots of Mets in it that's kind of causing compression and kind of a degree of gastric outflow obstruction, and it means that actually things are just staying in their stomach for ages. You've also got things like autonomic dysreflexia, which I guess we see in quite commonly in diabetic patients. So those kinds of things. And I suppose thinking about other reasons that the bowel might be slow, constipation's a big one. So kind of functional problems like that. So those are kind of your gastric stasis, and they're sort of things that you need to address directly, the cause of those. And then you've got chemical kind of causes. So all your kind of highly emetogenic chemotherapies, and there's lots of them, radiotherapy, all your electrolyte abnormalities. So your uremic patients with end-stage renal failure, your patients with hypercalcemia of any cause, all electrolytes can cause problems, hyponatremia, and then drugs also lead to problems with, they cause that chemical imbalance. So you've got your gastric stasis, your chemical, and then things that affect your vestibular system. So whether that be things like inner ear problems or tumours in that area or whatever. So things that kind of affect your balance and affect those can also make you nauseous. And then you've got your raised intracranial pressure, which kind of sometimes can feed into vestibular as well. But, you know, has somebody got a big tumour? Has somebody got a bleed, a big ischemic event that's causing edema and causing them to have raised intracranial pressures? So all those kind of things. And I suppose you'd be looking for those other symptoms of raised intracranial pressure with those patients. And then you've got a group of patients who have got gut wall problems. So people that have got distended bowel for whatever reason, which leaks lots of serotonin, people that are in bowel obstruction, or people that have had radiotherapy and things that have caused an insult to the bowel mucosa and things. So other things like that, there's a specific group, which we'll talk about in a bit, of antiemetics that you need to think about if you suspect that that's the cause of it.
Okay, brilliant. So common causes we're thinking gastric stasis, chemical causes, vestibular, raised intracranial pressure and gut wall. So how's that then going to affect which type of antiemetic you're going to choose and how do they work?
Okay, so unfortunately this is one of those horrible things that you need to know a bit about receptors. We all hate them. It's hard to keep in your brain, but I think actually if you can even have a diagram or something saved on your phone that you can refer back to that just helps you to kind of think about what drugs we're using, or if you roughly know that for gastric stasis you use this as a first line, I think it's just helpful to kind of have an appreciation. It's important thinking about side effects as well, which we'll talk about. Mm-hmm. So kind of in a nutshell, you've got your vomiting center, which is in your brain, and you've got lots of broad receptors that are in your vomiting center. So this is where we're looking at targeting, where we don't know where the cause is. So if you don't know what the cause of your patient's nausea is, despite taking a good history, etc., then you're probably going to want to be thinking about, actually, what antiemetic can I give that's going to hit the all this kind of final common pathway. So you've got NK1 receptors, which, you know, we only really see patients that are having chemotherapy that have drugs that specifically target these. You've got your 5-HT2, which are your serotonin receptors. You've got your dopamine receptors, your histamine receptors, and your muscarinic. So those are kind of most of them. There are a couple of other different types of receptors scattered throughout the vomiting pathway, but they're the main ones. And we'll talk about what drugs hit what receptors a bit later, but they're kind of the ones that are in that final common pathway because everything feeds in eventually to the vomiting center. You've then got your chemoreceptor trigger zone. So by what the name suggests, it's kind of those chemochemical causes of nausea. So you've got your 5-HT3 receptors in there, which is kind of the one that your drugs that specifically target highly emetogenic chemotherapies kind of specifically target. So that's your ondansetron. You've got your NK1 receptors again, which we said before are kind of more chemo specific, but you might have heard of aprepitant. It's not used very often. There's a couple of other fancy ones. They're really just used by oncology in my experience. And then you've got dopamine receptors there. So they're kind of all the things that you would expect to have caused chemical problems. Your cerebral cortex, so GABA is a big one here. So this is where your fear and anxiety and anticipatory nausea feed in. You've got a bit of histamine there as well. Then you've got your vestibular. So these are your inner ear, your raised intracranial pressure stuff. So they're generally muscarinic and histamine receptors. And then kind of a bit less feeding into the vomiting center themselves, but you've got some sort of peripheral gut wall receptors. So mainly in your bowel, you've got 5-HT receptors. So if there's any damage, lots of serotonin's released there. And then in your stomach, you've got some dopamine receptors. You've got 5-HT4 and motilin, which some of you might have remember from your medical school days. But essentially what happens in your stomach when people get gastric stasis is there's a phenomenon called the dopamine break. So you're lucky, I need to get this right, but you then want to give dopamine antagonists to try and break that dopamine break to try and get things moving through. So those are your kind of main ones. It's rubbish to try and remember the receptors, but much as I do for hyponatremia, I think if you can just have like a little diagram on your phone that you can refer to, I think it really helps because trying to keep them in your brain is difficult.
For sure. I think knowing where you can go to retrieve that information is important in daily practice. And maybe just remembering a few little bits to target for your exam would be useful. So thinking about which drugs work on which receptors then?
Generally, so we'll talk about the receptors, but generally I kind of like to think about it as, you know, if you've got some sort of gastric stasis, then what you want to do is you want to try and get things moving through the gut again. So you're thinking about things really that act locally there. We're looking at kind of the receptors that sit in the stomach and that upper GI tract. So you're thinking about dopamine receptors, you're thinking about 5-HT4, motilin. So the sort of one that we probably all know about is metoclopramide. So this acts both centrally and peripherally. So it acts on 5-HT4 receptors, and I'm pretty sure it's an agonist of 5-HT4. So it tries to get things moving through rather than stopping moving. And then you've got dopamine antagonist, and this is kind of where we talk about that dopamine break and trying to stop that from happening. But metoclopramide, as we probably know, crosses the blood-brain barrier. So it's also active at the dopamine receptors in the chemoreceptor trigger zone, which is why I suppose sometimes it's helpful in those chemical causes as well, being mindful of the fact that if it crosses the blood-brain barrier, then it can cause those extrapyramidal side effects that we see with dopamine antagonists. So an alternative which works in a similar way and acts just on dopamine receptors, just peripherally, so just really in the GI tract, is domperidone. So this would be, so it acts similarly, doesn't work on 5-HT4, but still has the effect of breaking that dopamine break. So I guess for gastric stasis, he kind of causes those, are your kind of go-tos. So then thinking a little bit on ondansetron, because I think, Rachel, you spoke about cyclosine being a go-to. From a palliative care point of view, we often see people that are on 3 or 4 different PRN antiemetics. They all work in opposing ways.
Yeah.
None of them are particularly broad. And what we see quite a lot is people that are on ondansetron. So ondansetron was just really developed for these kind of highly emetogenic chemotherapies. So it acts in the gut on 5-HT3 receptors, and it also acts in the chemoreceptor trigger zone. So it's quite a narrow spectrum antiemetic, and it only works really on 5-HT3. So even though it's one of the ones that we, I guess, are the most comfortable with, and it's one of the first ones that comes to mind, I think you just need to be mindful that actually doesn't act in the vomiting center. So it's only going to be for very specific causes. So things like your chemotherapy in the chemoreceptor trigger zone, your radiation induced damage of the GI tract, abdominal distension, because when your bowels are kind of really distended, they just release lots of serotonin. So it's helpful for those kinds of things. So that's just kind of a word, you know, ondansetron can be very helpful if you're prescribing it for the right thing. And because of the fact that it's quite constipating, so because it's kind of almost doing the opposite to metoclopramide, because metoclopramide's 5-HT4 agonist, whereas this is a 5-HT3 antagonist, it does the opposing thing. So if you think about prokinetics getting things moving, ondansetron can slow things down. And sometimes that's okay, but just worth knowing about that. And then you've got our good old favourite, cyclosine. So that is an antihistamine and an antimuscarinic. So it acts on the vestibular system where those receptors are. It acts a little bit in the cerebral cortex. And it does have, because you know, there are both histamine and antimuscarinic receptors in the vomiting centre. But again, reasonably narrow, and lots of antimuscarinic peripheral and central side effects with it. But, you know, very appropriate for some patients. And then thinking a little bit about the role of benzodiazepine. So there is GABA there in the cerebral cortex, and benzodiazepine would be your potentiator of GABA. So trying to help with that, but not kind of appropriate for everybody. But if you think that that's a cause, we talked a little bit about aprepitant. There is a couple of other slightly weird and wonderful ones that I've only really seen in a oncology setting. That would be your NK1. Which are in the chemoreceptor trigger zone in the vomiting centre. And then I suppose you get onto the ones that we love to use in palliative care because they're a bit broader. They hit a few more of the receptors. The ones that we commonly use are anticipatory drugs, because actually we don't have to worry too much about what the specific cause of nausea is. You've got your levomipromazine, which I know they love to use in Nottingham as their anticipatory. So that acts on your dopamine, your histamine, muscarinic, 5-HT2, 5-HT3. So majority of those receptors that are sitting there in the vomiting center is that kind of final pathway, and a bit of 5-HT3, which is in the gut wall, as we said, and in the chemoreceptor trigger zone. And then haloperidol, which is a bit less sedating. It hits less receptors, but because it doesn't hit those histamine and muscarinic receptors, so it's dopamine and 5-HT3, it's not as broad as levo, but also a bit less sedating. So I suppose those are some of the ones that you might be thinking about if you're a bit less sure what the cause is. And then not much, but some people might have seen dexamethasone used. We don't really know how it works. We don't know if it's got a direct effect on the vomiting center, whether it's because of its direct anti-inflammatory effect, whether it's because it does some reduced expression of serotonin receptors. But I suppose depending on the cause, it might be appropriate for other reasons, but probably one that you want to be seeking some specialist advice before starting.
Okay. And if you have taken your history and decided to choose one of these antiemetics, depending on what you think is causing the nausea, if that's not working, what's your approach to that? How do you then decide what to do next?
Okay. So I guess this is where your receptors become really important. So we know that if we can work out what the cause of somebody's nausea is, then we can direct treatment directly to them without, for example, giving them anti-muscarinic side effects or side effects that might cause other problems. So I suppose it's always best to try and use that mechanistic approach to begin with. But often it is multifactorial. So that's when you're thinking back to your receptors and you're thinking, okay, what receptors are the antiemetics that I've given them hitting? What other things is this likely to be? How do I cover some more bases? And that's, I guess, either going to be by switching your antiemetic to something that's more broad, or by adding something in if you think, okay, well, this is probably the cause of it, but actually the only other thing I can think of is this. So let's add this in and augment it with it. But as a general rule in palliative care patients, for kind of any vestibular irritation, raised intracranial pressure, you're probably thinking about cyclosine. For any kind of chemical causes, you're probably thinking haloperidol with its 5-HT3 and its dopamine. For your gastric stasis, you're thinking of prokinetics, so be that metoclopramide, domperidone. And then I suppose if it's not working, then you probably want to be looking at something like levomipromazine. I suppose possibly haloperidol if you've not used that, because that hits a few more areas. But occasionally, in a specialist setting, you'll see olanzapine that's being used. Occasionally, there's reasonable evidence for that, especially in kind of a cancer setting. But that would be, I guess, a specialist advice one if that's not something that's used as a standard in your trust. And then third line, so we talked about ondansetron earlier. So it might be that you think the drugs I'm giving are covering every receptor, but actually, is there just something that we're missing here? So that's often, rather than a first line ondansetron, you might think, let's add it in when every receptor other than the 5-HT3 is something we've tried. Trying to go with either cyclosine, haloperidol, or a prokinetic, then try and broaden it probably to something like levomipromazine, and then thinking maybe ondansetron because that's the only one that the others don't do.
Brilliant, that's really helpful, thank you. Well, thank you so much for talking to us today, Connie. It's been really, really helpful. For all of you guys listening, if you haven't had a go at our question of the week over on our Instagram page at mem.cast, have a look and leave any comments below. We'll see you again next week on Memcast.